Okay, well, thank you all for joining us. This is the Fats, Fuels, and Oils webinar for the week of April 19th. Today, I have Tori Alden with us. He's going to go over the veg oils and touch on a couple of different insights he has there. If you have any questions during the presentation, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A section, and we'll be sure to get them answered at the end. With that, Tori, you want to take it from here?
Yep. Thanks, George. Welcome, everybody. So it's been another interesting week in the veg oil markets. Prior to this past week, we kind of were trending a little bit lower. I think there were probably a couple of times I wrote in my daily commentary that there's some chance for soybean oil and palm oil futures to drop down and test their 50-day moving averages. And like often happens, then the market just ripped right the other way in my face and proceeded to rally 4 cents. Some part of this, I think, is due to certainly some of the bullish NOPA data that we got, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But also, soybean futures have rallied pretty substantially. I think that has also lent some support to the whole soybean complex. So with that, let's dive into our forecast. You can see we didn't really change our forecast. We've basically gone from the lower end of the range to the upper end of the range. We may have bumped the nearby contract up a little bit just to keep prices within the range. And then based on today's movement, assuming the gains hold, we'll probably have to do that again here. I think that in the short term, the rally in soybeans could continue to drive soybean oil higher. Certainly, the demand for soybean meal has not been as strong as the demand for soybean oil on a relative basis, I guess. And one of the fund's favorite positions or one of their historically favorite positions has been trading oil share because they can trade both the long and the short. And so if soybeans continue to rally, I would expect that soybean oil would probably continue to benefit from that. In addition, we have cash markets have come back and they haven't quite eclipsed the mid-March highs in a lot of cases, but some of them are really, really close to those highs, and some of them have gotten a little bit above those highs. Canola oil is an example. Canadian canola oil shot well above its mid-March high here last week. It dropped pretty substantially yesterday, but I imagine that today's rally probably will turn that around. So I think, you know, in the short term, it's probably soybean oil prices, or rather soybean prices, that are kind of in control right now. And again, I've said this for the last several weeks, we kind of expect that to be the case through the summer. And we have to, at this point, assume normal growing weather. And that tends to mean that prices peak as farmers get soybeans planted. And then as the crop develops without any problems, that tends to weigh on prices a little bit. And so that's why you see sort of the general downtrend through harvest and then a little bit post-harvest. But then again, we expect that large demand from renewable diesel producers and the biofuel industry in general will drive prices pretty significantly higher into the end of the year. But again, that hasn't really changed that much over the last several weeks and maybe as much as a month. This week, we got the NOPA monthly report. Crush was just a little bit below market expectations, which if you read the commentary, I think has a couple of important points that to be made around expectations and where NOPA came in. In the expectations thing, what that tells me is that most analysts are predicting crush for 2021 above where USDA predicted it in its April WASDE report. And USDA actually cut its crush by 10 million bushels in the WASDE report. I think part of that is due to the fact that crush in February was so weak. And again, in March, if you look at what the NOPA crush number implies, it implies that crush fell below last year's level on an industry-wide basis. However, I think, and I think most other analysts probably tend to think the same thing, that the demand for soybean oil will continue to remain relatively robust. And soybean meal demand, while it's not exactly probably the strongest it's ever been, is strong enough to support a crush that is probably above USDA's number and probably above the 2.2 billion bushel level. We're at 2.25 or 2.225 rather. And I think that that there are a lot of other people that are probably close to where we are. And in fact, the average guess for the NOPA number was above our guess. We were a little bit closer to what NOPA reported than the average guess. The other thing I think that the NOPA crush number told us was that because the number was not that far below our expectation, was that if you just kind of assume the sort of traditional or the average seasonal pattern over the balance of the year, that the 2.225 number isn't wildly out of line. Now, that doesn't mean that crush can't slow down in the summer months or the difference between the report, the NOPA report this month, and the industry-wide crush is relatively small, which would imply a smaller crush this month. But it does suggest, I think, that USDA probably will need to raise its crush forecast over the coming months, as long as is the trends that are in place now remain, and we expect that to be the case. Soybean oil stocks actually came in a little bit below where we were expecting. They were a little bit tighter than we were expecting, and a little bit tighter than the market was expecting as well. Still, you can see we expect soybean oil stocks to build here and then to start to tighten pretty significantly going into the end of the year, and we expect 2021 ending stocks around 1.6 or 1.7 billion pounds. That's not historically dramatically tight. I think of 2 billion pounds as kind of the tipping point between bullish and bearish for soybean oil, in the same way that I think of 2 million tons as the tipping point between bullish and bearish for palm oil. So we're certainly below that level, but we're not approaching the lower end of the historical range, which is about 1.1 billion pounds. I think 21-22 will be a different story. And unless there are some pretty significant cuts in non-biofuel use, our biodiesel and renewable diesel feedstock demand predictions suggest that it's going to be difficult for soybean oil stocks to build over the next marketing year. Nevertheless, we'll see what the USDA says in early May about the crush and about oil stocks and what that implies for demand, and we'll adjust accordingly. Again, I think maybe there's some potential. I think you could make the argument that crush could slow down in the summer months. The board crush for July is certainly in the lower end of the historical range. Now, there's a substantial difference between what the board crush is telling you and what crushers are actually realizing. I have this conversation with a lot of people that want to point to the July board crush and say, obviously that needs to come up for crushers to provide enough soybean oil for the market. And on some level, I don't disagree with that argument, but there's basis for soybean oil on top of the futures market. Basis levels are certainly in the upper end of the historical range. And then beyond that, there's the spread between crude degummed and RBD, which has blown out to historically wide levels. And so what the crushers are actually realizing is well beyond the 60 cents, 65 cents that the board crush would imply. On top of that, I think that crushers are probably obviously much happier to crush when margins are $1.20, but they will continue to crush pretty actively at 65 cents, and really anything above 50 cents is considered, you know, they will continue to crush to meet the meal demand, and won't really slow down their activities just because the margin is relatively low. They're making enough money at that point to continue. For canola oil, we have again, this hasn't changed much. I think the front end of this probably may have come up a little bit. We expect that canola oil prices will remain relatively strong. And like I said, canola cash prices in Canada this week rose to a record level before selling off. And we think that that will continue. That increase occurred despite the fact that weekly crushing volumes for canola were not quite record, but were close, and were definitely at the upper end of that historical range as well. That was following a couple of weeks where they had kind of slowed down a little bit. The biggest question in canola and Canadian canola oil supply is this question about do we have enough canola seed to crush and to export? And of the two side or the two demand categories, kind of which one will blink first? Every time it seems like canola's crush is going to slow down, it then starts to pick back up. And so it's very difficult to cut that number. And exports have been surprisingly strong given the expected tightening of stocks that we're projecting for 2021. Either of those could, say, much like soybeans, either of those could slow down. And at this point, it's difficult to judge which one ultimately will slow down, or if either of them will slow down. USDA has obviously cast its vote for crush to slow down, but I think that the demand for biofuel feedstocks leaves a gap in non-biofuel demand that is going to be filled on some level by canola oil. And so I think that keeps crush relatively strong, crushing volumes relatively strong through the summer. It could be that I'm wrong and I'll end up having to cut my crush number, but last year USDA was kind of slow to raise its crush number up to the 10 million ton level because it was, I think in part because it was just so far above the prior record. You can see it was 10.1. versus 9.3 essentially. And I think that they are kind of in the same mindset. And also I can look at the canola trade matrix and I can make a good argument that canola exports are going to remain really robust and that we just will end up with really, really tight canola stocks. The only issue with that is that, like this week, the increase in the pace of the weekly crush implied that the monthly crush would rise by 65,000 tons. It's not a lot, but you can see it's basically 10% of the carryout. And more importantly, what it really means is that cutting the crush number becomes just that much more difficult as long as crush remains really, really robust. We'll get export data again here over the next, within the next couple of weeks, I guess, for Canada. And that'll be the first 8 months of the marketing year. So there won't be that much left. Right now, this number 10.9 implies that that exports over the last 5 months of the marketing year are going to have to decline 30% from what they did last year. And in last year, the second half of the year was particularly strong. I don't know that we're going to get a repeat of last year, and that's not what we're predicting. I think last year, part of the issue was that there were some problems with production in, in China. And so I think that was part of the strength of export shipments during the summer last year. But a 30% decrease year over year is still a big drop. And so that 10.9 number, I could easily see taking that up another 400,000 or 500,000 tons if I had enough, if ending stocks were high enough to allow me to do that. And it wouldn't look that unusual relative to history, recent history, or even over the last 5 years. But we just don't have the stocks. And so much in the same way in our soybean oil balance sheet, we kind of are trying to figure out exactly where non-biofuel demand is going to be, whether that's going to have to come down in order to accommodate the surge in demand that we expect from renewable diesel for Canadian canola oil and canola seed. It really is this export number in the competition between exports and crush to see who gets the what's remaining of the canola stocks. For palm oil, it was relatively slow news week, but palm oil followed soybean oil higher, relatively sharply higher, in part on follow through buying from the bullish MPOB data that came out last Monday, also in part from the cargo surveyor data that is saying at least through the first 20 days of the month that export shipments are probably about 10% above where they were for the same period last month. And again, last month grew from historically low shipments the prior month. But I think that the export numbers are really what the market is focused on right now. There's some growing concern about coronavirus in India and the cases surging there. And so there's some nervousness about whether this export demand will continue through the end of the month. I think every 5 days as we get new cargo surveyor data, you could see the palm oil market either rally or sell off pretty sharply if you get sort of a change in the trend or a significant change in the trend. The 10% number for the first 20 days was a little bit below 15% for the first 15 days. That's not terribly unusual. And I think what traders really want to see is just that continued growth, because we're in the time of the year when output is going to grow month over month. And so exports will need to grow month over month to keep stocks from rising too much. Based on the cargo surveyor data, we did raise our export forecast for April just a little bit. We didn't raise our annual number, and so that didn't really change our ending stocks outlook. And we expect that palm oil might be under a little bit of pressure here in the short term, kind of similar to kind of driven by the sideways to maybe slightly lower forecast that we have for soybean oil and the potential for Indian imports to slow down. However, the cash market for palm oil looks like the cash markets for other veg oils, with most palm oil price series at or above the March highs. And so I think any decline is probably going to be relatively short-lived. And then we have a significant increase in prices, that's driven entirely by just an increase in world vegetable oil prices, sort of off the back of rising U.S. soybean oil prices. All right, on to biodiesel. This was maybe the most interesting data that came out in the last week. We got data from the EMTS for March, and it's a little tough to read. I've got to pick a better colors for this chart here, but this is March. And so domestic biodiesel production was 10 million gallons above the five-year average. And that's important because obviously the hobo spread has been historically high all through March. It was above $2 for the entire month. And so we had expected domestic biodiesel production to respond to that increase. Now, higher RIN prices and RIN values have offset a bit of the implied decline in profitability that the hobo spread implies. But if you look at the gross margin monitor, you can see that even with credits, March was below February. And so not a time when we would have expected the level of production that we saw. Our forecast going forward is we cut it quite a bit after we got the February data, and it's based on basically this trend line for hobo. You can see we're kind of clustered around that. This is the longer term trend line, and you can see you don't have to be an econometric expert to understand that this relationship isn't the tightest relationship you've ever seen in your life. And so it may be that we're going to need to raise our forecast for the year back more around this trend line than the trend line where we're at, just because the data so far is tending to cluster better around this trend line than the new trend line. Again, I think that RIN prices have something to do with that, but I don't think that explains the whole story. And so I think we probably will wait until we get another month, maybe 2 months worth of data before we really make a big significant change. We made some big significant changes over the last couple of months. I kind of want to let those settle a little bit before we go back and whip back around and raise production again. But we did raise our forecast for biodiesel production by about 15 million gallons. I think that's about how much domestic production was above our expectations for March. And we'll probably take that approach for the next month or two in terms of just our forecast. And we'll probably leave the forward forecast relatively unchanged. Now, if something were to change, if the hobo spread collapses or there's some other development that makes it obvious that biodiesel production should be where it historically has been, then we will make a big change. But in terms of if the hobo spread remains elevated and RIN prices remain elevated and the fundamentals look pretty close to what we've seen over the last couple of months, we probably won't make any real significant changes, at least for a month or two, I would guess. We'll look here at the RIN price forecast kind of quickly so we can get to some questions. This didn't really change a whole lot from last week. The numbers were really close to where we were the week before. We expect that RIN prices remain relatively well supported and historically high. That's driven in part by our expectations for the hobo spread, which we do expect maybe to come down a little bit, but then to start to increase. And this is, of course, driven a lot by our expectations for soybean oil prices And so that's why you get kind of the down and then the up into the end of the year. But that's a big driver of our RIN forecast. And then LCFS credit prices, again, we kind of expect to sort of slowly leak lower. There hasn't really been any change in our outlook for that. And as you can see over the last couple of months, that's kind of, it's been following that trend. If anything, maybe they've come down a little bit faster than we have expected. But we expect that the rising production probably continues to pressure those values. All right, with that, I will open it up for questions.
All right, thanks, Tori. First question we have is, how is the rumor mill for the Supreme Court decision on SREs? Any insights there?
Honestly, I have talked to a bunch of people over the last month or so, and nobody really asks me about that. Nobody really talks about that. I get a lot of questions on here, but nobody that I really talk to asks me about that. So I still expect that given the current administration's view on renewable fuels and the environment, that that we're going to go forward with basically zero SREs. That's what we have built into our forecast, and that's kind of what I expect will where we'll end up one way or the other. If the Supreme Court decision does something that allows producers to get SREs easier, I guess, then maybe we would think about that a little bit. But again, I would be really surprised if the administration then didn't do something or tell the EPA that not to grant the SREs and then battle it out again in the courts. And I think probably no matter what, even though this is a Supreme Court decision, what I tend to think about a lot of these things is that there's no way for both sides to be happy. And so there obviously isn't another court that they can appeal this to, but that doesn't mean there's not another issue that they can't come up with that looks a lot like this one, whatever side loses, to start running through the courts. And so I suspect that we'll be dealing with this for as long as we cover biofuels, this kind of question.
All right. Sorry for the studio mishap there. It happens when you have a dog.
That was really behind the scenes.
Yeah. All right. Next question is, are you tracking the permitting of co-processing units in California where they would then move from RBD to crude degummed? My understanding is they might have problems getting the permits due to increased trucking.
We are tracking the permits, and we have a list of the plants that we expect to come online or that already are online. That list we haven't really changed that list in a little bit. I haven't heard anybody express big concerns about the trucking, but I could imagine that maybe in the short term that would be something that they would consider. I know that given California's real push for electric vehicles and the, I suppose, potential, depending on what you think about some of the more recent developments in the electronic sort of big truck vehicle market, there's some potential that some of those could be electric vehicles. So maybe they could make that kind of argument. Honestly, though, I have to say I don't have a great answer to this one. So George, if you will kind of note who asked that question, what I'll do is I'll do some digging and talk to some people, and I will I'll email you a better answer than I've given you here.
All right, thanks, Tori. One thing I'm just going to interject before this question, we have a oil seeds webinar that Tori will be doing next week on Thursday. It's currently booked at 100 attendees. However, Join the wait list, because if you get on the wait list, you might be able to get into it, and we will record it as well. That said, this question is, do you have a medium-term view as renewable diesel comes online? Does biodiesel get backed out of the market, thus opening up more soybean oil supply to go into renewable diesel?
So the answer is a little bit, but not as much as I had anticipated, to be honest with you. Part of what I thought would happen would be that, and this is going to reveal a little bit of my naivete, is that some of the biodiesel producers would just convert to renewable diesel production. And I have learned recently that that is not as simple as I thought it would be. And so I think if you have a biodiesel plant and your choice is to produce biodiesel or turn it into something else that's not a renewable diesel plant, or I guess in theory you could invest a lot of money to convert it to a renewable diesel plant, I think that you are going to keep operating that plant for as long as you possibly can. It turns out that the key catalyst here is going to be the blender's tax credit. And so I think as long as that blender's tax credit remains, that the slowdown in biodiesel production will probably be much, much slower than people are anticipating. Certainly much slower than I think I was anticipating. And so until that credit goes away, and I think now what the latest sort of iteration of ideas on that credit is sort of a permanent or semi-permanent extension, or an extension for a significant amount of time, but at a lower level, maybe 50 cents or something, that biodiesel producers are going to continue to produce. Now, of course, there's going to be some biodiesel producers that are integrated in with crushers, and those guys are probably going to continue to produce. They'll probably be the last ones that will stop production. But I think in general, and certainly in the medium term, my guess is that that biodiesel production will be stronger than people expect. I think we have it kind of, we cut it this year probably again to a level that's a little bit too low. And we're probably going to have to raise it up over the next several months. But I think after that, we kind of built in basically a slow reduction over the next several years. I think we're going to have to revisit that, and probably will end up raising that forecast a little bit. Now, if you get a situation where we have a drought in the U.S. or something like that, where there just are not feedstock supplies are significantly lower than anybody expects right now, then I think that you might be able to force some of these things into bankruptcy, and they just kind of have to get shut down. But outside of that, I think it's going to be much more difficult for biodiesel production to slow down than everybody's expecting.
Okay. And Tori, this would be the last question because we're a little over now. How do you explain the inversion of futures contracts versus forecasted price for soybean oil?
The inversion, I think what they mean is backwardation. Do you mean the nearby contract is higher than the...
The answer is okay. Yes, backwardation.
Okay. So this is something that I've thought a lot about over the last several months, and I've talked to a bunch of people about this over the last several months. I think that it's mainly structural due to the soybean market. If you look at the soybean market, there's a huge backwardation in the soybean futures as well. And while in theory, soybean oil prices can trade at any level completely independent of soybean prices, given the fact that soybean meal demand hasn't been super, super strong, it bolts the soybean oil price a little bit tighter to the soybean price. And so I think that's really why. I think there's part of it that is also the supply of soybean oil that's actually available to the market might be a little bit lower than you would typically see, because the crushers know that they can capture the spread between crude degummed and RBD. And so, whereas in the past they would be happy to sell crude degummed, or they would sell crude degummed, whether they were happy or not, I guess I don't know. But they would sell crude degummed. Right now, they're not as willing to do that as they have been because of that spread. You can see this in the deliveries against the futures contract. So historically, you have really, really large soybean oil deliveries against the contract during the delivery period, and those deliveries have basically vanished. Another way that I've kind of gotten this question is why don't the big ABCD companies just stand there and deliver into the nearby market and capture the higher prices. And I think that is again because the spread. So I think it's there's two parts to it. One, because of sort of the weakness in meal demand, that means the correlation between soybean oil prices and soybean prices is a little bit higher. And there's a huge backwardation in soybean prices. And so I think that explains a lot of it. The other is that I think that even though if I look at what the NOPA stocks number is and say, okay, well, that implies industry stocks that are 2.2 billion pounds or 2.3 billion pounds, which is certainly ample, that all of those stocks aren't necessarily available to the market right now because the crushers want to refine that oil and then sell it as RBD to renewable diesel producers or to whoever later, and they don't want to give as much of the crude degummed up as they have in the past.
All right, Tori, I think that's all we've got time for.
All right.
Thank you for the questions from all the attendees. Tori, thank you for the answers. And we will chat next week. Also, just FYI, we have the Jacobson Conference coming up. We're going to do a virtual conference in May on the 26th. We'll be sending more data out about that. And then a physical conference in August, late August. I have to get more specific dates, but see some more information coming to you from us in probably the next few days. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, George.